It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Tuesday, November 17th. I'm Patricia Naft. Thousands of Delta Montrose Electric Association customers lost power Monday morning. KVNF's Laura Pomisano has more.
DMEA estimates 4,500 members across its service area experienced outages. Becky Mashburn with the Electric Cooperative says the weather was to blame.
This early snow was heavy and wet, and many of the trees haven't lost all their leaves, so it really weighs down the branches. They snap off, and they fall into our power lines, damaging them and in some cases bringing them down.
Outages occurred in Montrose, Orchard City, Eckert, Cedar Edge, and Crawford. Mashburn says crews fully restored power to affected areas by 10 a.m. For KVNF, I'm Laura Pomisano.
The snowfall is causing problems to more than just power lines, and the western slope will be getting more of it. A weather advisory and winter storm watch has gone out for most of Colorado. Paul Frisby, a forecaster with the National Weather Service, says even more snow is on the way.
Well, the warnings are for heavy snow, and in the mountains we're expecting 10 to 20 inches. Some spots may actually receive around 2 feet. In the valley spots, you're going to see about roughly 3 to 5 or even locally upwards to 8 inches of snow. At least that's what we are expecting. We consider this a relatively early season, so it's a heads-up notification that travel will be impacted.
He also warns that another snowstorm is expected for this area around Thanksgiving weekend. The dumping of wet snow has prompted warnings of avalanche. The Colorado Avalanche Information Center labeled the Grand Mesa and Gunnison areas as being in considerable danger of avalanche, and the San Juans are under an avalanche watch until this afternoon. The Colorado Department of Transportation has also declared chain laws in effect for several areas. You can find specific information at cotrip.org. Starting yesterday, sheep herders will be getting a pay bump. The U.S. Department of Labor will be slowly increasing shepherd pay to a minimum of $1,500 a month, doubling what the minimum used to be. The Montrose-based Hispanic Affairs Project brought a lawsuit against the Department of Labor about the minimum wage for the shepherds, who are often foreign workers from countries like Chile. Marqueta Zubakova is an immigrant attorney with HAP.
Consider it a victory that there will be an increase, but we also think that they deserve more, so we decided to continue with the lawsuit.
They're fighting to get the pay raise to $2,500 a month, something critics say will bankrupt ranchers across the West. But what Zubakova says is simply on par with what American workers would be paid. Governor John Hickenlooper says Colorado would be open to accepting Syrian refugees. This comes as several Republican governors say they don't want them in their states. Benta Berkland has more.
Some in the GOP are threatening to block Syrian refugees from entering the U.S., saying in the wake of the terrorist attacks in Paris, it's irresponsible. But Governor John Hickenlooper is taking a different approach. He says in a written statement that, quote, we can protect our security and provide a place where the world's most vulnerable can rebuild their lives. Hickenlooper says he does want the verification process for refugees to be as stringent as possible. His office says federal vetting takes up to 2 years. So far, Syrian refugees from the current crisis have not relocated to Colorado. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
When oil and gas drilling bumps up next to homes and communities, there are tensions. That has long been evident in Colorado, where a handful of cities have fought to ban the practice within their borders. Now, state regulators are considering some new rules which would give local governments more input over oil and gas development. Inside Energy's Dan Boyce says these recommendations come from a governor-appointed task force made up of citizens, elected leaders, and industry representatives.
Matt Lepore drops a fat three-ring binder on a table in his office.
These are all of the pre-hearing statements that have been submitted by the parties.
He's the director of Colorado's Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
It's about it's a three-inch notebook, I think, and it's full.
The pages and pages he's sifting through come from all sorts of people on all sides who will be affected by the new rules the commission is considering this week.
At the hearing, all of the parties can testify. They can put on witnesses to testify.
The goal of Governor Hickenlooper's oil and gas task force was to address concerns that drilling operations are being built too close to homes, and local governments don't have enough say in that process.
Well, it certainly doesn't solve the problem.
That is Matt Sura.
I was a member of the governor's oil and gas task force.
He's an attorney who represents local governments and individuals in disputes with oil and gas companies. He's one task force member who thinks the group failed. There were 9 total recommendations that came out of the task force, but only 2 require actual changes to state regulations on the siting of oil and gas facilities. 1 requires companies to register in the communities where they operate, so cities can keep track. And the 2nd says companies have to reach out to those communities 90 days before applying to build a large oil and gas facility, to reach out and consult in good faith about finding the best placement for that facility. If communities and the companies cannot reach a consensus, the project will go to a public hearing before the Oil and Gas Commission. That did not happen before. But here's where Sura sees a problem. That new rule only applies to very large facilities in pretty dense areas, either with 22 buildings surrounding a well or 11 buildings on one side. In the last couple of years, out of 1,700 projects approved by the state, only 13 meet that criteria.
More than 99% of oil and gas locations do not fit this very narrow limitation.
But a lot more projects are that close to a couple of homes, or a school, or a park.
All those areas don't receive any of this additional protection.
And these recommendations do not increase the distance drilling operations would have to be from homes, which Sura says was one of the reasons the task force was convened in the first place.
Without addressing those core concerns, we're going to be right back in the same place within a matter of a year or two.
Oil company Anadarko was also represented on the task force, and they're not interested in making these proposed rules any stronger than they are now. Here's Public Affairs Manager Robin Olson.
We at Anadarko have made it a priority to work with local communities as we plan development, and we're going to continue to do that wherever we operate.
Oil and gas producers feel they did give ground to local governments through the task force process, and the scope of the rules the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is considering represent a compromise all the stakeholders could live with.
Undermining that process isn't in the spirit of good faith.
Oil and Gas Conservation Commission Director Matt Lepore says he understands how communities staring down oil rigs may still be frustrated.
They're used to their neighborhood the way it is, and they like their neighborhood the way it is.
But the state constitution guarantees owners of mineral rights the authority to develop those minerals. And Lepore says these rules are bringing the state closer to balancing concerns of citizens and oil and gas companies.
The system works for most of the people most of the time.
But there's that binder on Lepore's desk, full of statements from people who still do not think the system is working. The Oil and Gas Commission will listen to 2 full days of hearings this week on the rules. They're likely to vote on adopting them on December 7th. For Inside Energy, I'm Dan Boyce.
For KBNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.